I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
Hello, this is Mike Swanson, and in a few moments, you're going to listen to another segment of Parallax Views. But before you do that, let me tell you about my new book, Why the Vietnam War. It's a sequel to my previous book called The War State, which has lots of positive reviews and Amazon's been out for years. But this one is a more detailed case study of how American Empire and National Security State operate using Vietnam. And I believe it shows also how things work today, how policy is actually made and why. So grab the book on Amazon.com, Why the Vietnam War.
Hey there, Parallax Views listeners. On this edition of the program, a recent controversy arose when Tucker Carlson made allegations that the NSA, the National Security Agency, has been spying on him. Now, this episode is going to get beyond those allegations into the broader issue of domestic surveillance programs in the United States, as well as issues pertaining to how the government deals with domestic extremism, the imperial presidency, and the problem of entrenched bureaucratic agencies of a secretive nature. Some people call that the deep state. Joining us to unpack all those topics is Jim Bovard, a libertarian author of such books as Public Policy Hooligan, Attention Deficit Democracy, and a book that I was very fond of in the Bush years, The Bush Betrayal. Put aside whatever you think of Tucker Carlson. Put aside the allegations he is making. The bigger issue here, and the one that we really should be thinking about, is how the NSA operates, how domestic surveillance programs are carried out in the United States of America. Again, Jim Bovard joins us to discuss. With that being said, let's get right to the conversation. Welcome to Parallax Views, a guest who I've been reading since my teenaged years as a libertarian. I moved a little bit more to the left end of the political spectrum in recent years, but I always have found the work of our guest, Jim Bovard, very interesting and very principled. I was a big fan of The Bush Betrayal, which I used to recommend to everyone during the Bush years, whether they were right or left or libertarian, and also the author of such books as Public Policy Hooligan and Attention Deficit Democracy. How are you doing today, Jim?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on the show. This should be lots of fun.
So first, where I wanted to begin, we're going to talk about an article you wrote for the Daily Caller about the NSA, but before that, I just wanted to talk a little bit about maybe your background for listeners that aren't as familiar and how you became interested in topics related to what I would say is overreach and government abuse of power.
It comes natural to me. I guess at some point I developed a decent bullshit alarm, and there was so much bullshit about some of the surveillance stuff and the abuses of power. I've done a number of books on that topic. One in 1994 called Lost Rights, The Destruction of American Liberty, where I was trying to tie together a lot of the different ways that the government was violating people's rights and becoming increasingly oppressive. There was a chapter in there on the criminalization of daily life. And what I tried to do was blend the stuff on the drug war and crackdowns on guns, to try to help the gun owners recognize that they should take common cause in ending the drug war, because a lot of the precedents being set for the drug war were being applied to gun owners, and vice versa with a lot of the drug activists. It's like, okay, they're going after marijuana next, and next they're going after the 22 rifles or nowadays the AR-15s. So, and it's, you know, it's fun to try to unravel some of these policies and do to find out the dirt that can open up people's eyes, and then to try to explain it in a way that is both edifying and hopefully entertaining.
I was just going to add to that. You know, I think there's a lot of issues that people take for granted aren't necessarily simple left-right issues. They're issues that affect all of us. For me, the big example is, you know, people will talk about things like Waco or Ruby Ridge as only affecting right-wing Americans, which I, first off, I find that bizarre. And even if I don't like the politics of, say, Randy Weaver, I don't think, you know, his kid, his wife, and his dog should have ended up dead. But, you know, we can look at incidents like the MOVE bombing in Philadelphia. And, you know, this affects all kinds of people from all over the political spectrum. And I wish more people would really recognize that today.
I agree. It's interesting. If you go back to, I think, early 1994, there was a joint statement by the National Rifle Association and the ACLU calling for reining in federal law enforcement out of control, spurred by things like Waco and Ruby Ridge. And there were a lot of drug war atrocities in the inner city at that point, still are, of course. But there was a recognition and on both sides, and it was a very healthy thing. And there were, you know, there was a period during the Clinton administration where it's like, you know, folks are getting this. Folks are recognizing that arbitrary government power is a danger across the board. Liberals, conservatives, you know, everyone. But then along came 9/11, and it seemed like all the lessons vanished overnight. And so many people who had been pro-freedom, you know, the next morning they're on the other side of the barricade cheering for John Ashcroft.
So in regards to this latest article you've written for the Daily Caller, it's about Tucker Carlson. And I want everyone listening, put aside whether you're a fan of Tucker Carlson or not, what is going on with Tucker Carlson and the NSA?
Well, Tucker Carlson has said that the NSA has spied on him and leaked his personal emails and texts to journalists. This is a very serious charge if it's true. And, you know, part of the difficulty for the, you know, writing about something like this is, you know, it's a secret agency. And so you try to figure out, so what actually happened? And the NSA has a, you know, it thrives by covering up its crimes. It's sort of like a number of law enforcement agencies. But this is a branch of the Pentagon. This is, you know, U.S. military establishment. And it's not supposed to be turning its spy powers on American citizens here at home. But that's happened massively. And the government has lied about it again and again. And the level of brazen denials are almost comical in retrospect. You know, you think back 8 years ago this summer, Edward Snowden was blowing the NSA's credibility to pieces. What did President Obama do? President Obama goes on Jay Leno and then announces, you know, we're not spying on any Americans. And I'm thinking like, okay, so I guess he didn't read the latest revelations from Snowden, or else he thinks Americans are really stupid. And that wouldn't be the case, would it?
When this topic comes up, I think every so often I will still come across certain Americans that will say to me, well, you know, if you have nothing to hide, then you have nothing to worry about when it comes to the NSA. And I'm sure you've gotten that kind of, to me, it's an ignorant response. But how do you respond to that type of thing?
Well, I basically admit I've got a lot to hide. No, it's, you know, the saying is those who have nothing to hide have nothing to fear. And it's a great joke line if you're speaking to a libertarian audience. But it's something which leftists understand as well, because you have the government going through everything that you write or text or even everything which you see. That, you know, there was a saying that don't write anything in an email that you would not want to hear read out loud in federal court by a prosecutor. And it's unfortunate that that needs to be the standard for email. I gave a talk to a libertarian state convention a couple months ago, and you know, I was just kind of beating people over the head with a stick about, you know, there's an awful lot of informants out there and people I've encountered and, you know, people who I can just kind of, you know, they just have a certain odor to them. And there's the kind of questions that they ask. And it's like, you know, I think a lot of your listeners, folks who would listen to a podcast like this on a regular basis, would be able to recognize some of those. But there are so many Americans that are so gullible. And as you said, still think the government is trustworthy. But even something as simple as your email and your text, it's possible to take out lines, sentences from something you might have written 5 years ago and have you sounding like, or not you, but have a lot of people, especially if they're in the habit of sending email when they're angry, you know, you take a handful of those quotes and next thing you know, you look like it's be possible for a prosecutor to say you're a public enemy. Maybe not a public enemy, but at least someone who needs to be surveilled, at least someone who, you know, maybe we don't need a FISA warrant, but we can just accidentally, you know, vacuum up all of his email. So part of what was part of what concerns me in the Carlson controversy is that, first of all, you have the NSA being able to round up 20 billion record events a day and have them, you know, on the desk of the or on the systems of their analysts within 60 minutes. I think it was William Binney who said NSA, a mastermind, a great guy, activist and dissident, said that the NSA can store up to a billion times more information than East Germany Stasi did back in the 70s and 80s. This gives you some indication of how much information the government may have on you. Part of what's the concern nowadays is the Biden administration seems to want to expand its definition of domestic terrorism. I've been looking at some of the cases from early this year, the Capitol breach, I guess they're calling it now. And you have, you know, the prosecutors are talking about terrorism charges for basically for people who have confessed that they were guilty of marching or parading through the U.S. Capitol, which I think is classified as a felony. But you got people doing pleas on this, and then the prosecutors say, well, yeah, you know, this is a sign of terrorism. And I think like, well, gosh, there's an awful lot of terrorists out there because anybody's out there marching, boom.
Could I add something to that really briefly? I just pulled up an article from The Intercept, and I think this is important in relationship to what you're saying. And it's an article from June 2021 that is entitled U.S. Military Training Document Says Socialists Represent quote-unquote terrorist ideology. So even the left can be targeted by these sort of, you know, domestic extremism measures that are being taken under the Biden administration. And I think that should be a concern to leftists as well as rightists.
That's a good point. That was an excellent article by The Intercept. The Intercept has some folks that have done great work. I mean, hopefully not every federal whistleblower gets turned in by them, but there were earlier documents from the Pentagon which talked about how the folks who were publicly protesting anti-war, that was a form of low-level terrorism. And it's like, you know, I've been to a lot of anti-war demos. It's like, oh, well, you know, I'm sure I've got a dossier. So what the hell? So at least, well, anyhow, it always makes it exciting when I go through TSA.
In regards to this Tucker Carlson uproar controversy with the NSA, what has the media reaction been like? Because that's a large portion of what your article is actually about. Apparently, the NSA are just, you know, just perfect, nice, lily white, you know, they're here to protect us.
Well, this is a sad thing, because if you go back 8 years, you had Snowden completely destroying the NSA's credibility. And, you know, you had the media, you know, for a while admitted, yeah, well, that does seem to be an awful lot of crimes that they've committed. And, oh, the Fourth Amendment. I think I heard about that when I was in, civics education one day. So, but with the most recent thing, a lot of the reaction has been animosity to Tucker Carlson and to Fox News. Carlson has been making some great. Carlson's caught a lot of heat because he's had guests who had talked about the possibility of FBI informants or undercover agents having a role in January 6th. And I think he saying those kind of things probably put some crosshairs on him, maybe not by the NSA, maybe just by some of the media that's histrionic on that issue. But it's fascinating to me that there was a comment by a CIA guy who's now at the Atlanta Council who was shocked and outraged. I think that Glenn Greenwald had said something about the CIA's record of, you know, a criminal record. And he was saying, well, just terrible to have people encouraging that kind of doubt and cynicism. And it's like cynicism is what made this country great. It was cynicism about government power. It was cynicism about both Republicans and Democrats. And it was cynicism that spurred the founding fathers to try to put a leash on politicians of all types and all government officials. Part of what struck me about the Tucker Carlson case was right around the time that he made his allegations, there was a dissent. There was a Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board that the Congress forced George Bush to create back around 2004, 2005. This oversight board has been mostly a toothless tiger, but there was a member of that board, Travis LeBlanc, issued a dissent and said that there were real problems with this NSA program called X Key Score. Now, this is one of my favorite NSA programs because folks say, well, you know, once again, going back to what you said earlier, nothing to hide, nothing to fear. But Snowden revealed this X Key Score was being used to commandeer the email of any American who was caught, quote, searching the web for suspicious stuff, end quote. This was the standard NSA was using. Oh, he searched the web for suspicious stuff. Well, let's get his email. So there was also an inspector general report that came out recently, or it was actually a federal court decision that got declassified, that showed that the FBI was still abusing its powers over the data that the NSA seizes, and that you had cases of if someone called to report a crime to the FBI, an FBI agent might rummage in that person's email. And even if a person simply volunteered for the FBI Citizens Academy program, the FBI may have tracked them illegally online. So it's a complete charade to say that there's a leash on these agencies or on these programs. The Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court has been worse than useless. It's there as a figment to pretend the government obeys the law. Well, it happens every now and then, sort of like a broken clock, but it's frustrating.
So I wanted to add, at the beginning of your article in the Daily Caller, you mention this MSNBC analyst, Andrew Weissman, who was formerly the chief prosecutor for
yes. Okay.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller. And I guess he said, oh, this is so horrible. He's sowing distrust of the NSA, which is so anti-American. And it's fascinating to me because Weissman also wanted to sort of play both sides and say, well, you know, I think there could be real issues with the NSA at times, but we'll have to investigate those internally. Yeah. And I'm like, well, why do you get to decide what is and isn't legitimate criticism of the NSA? And why should we trust the NSA to investigate itself?
Well, it's fascinating to see a former top federal lawyer prosecutor, now probably very well paid MSNBC analyst, who's claiming that sowing distrust of the NSA is anti-American. It's like, you know, again, it was distrust of government which helped Americans, leftists, conservatives across the board manage to maintain some of their freedoms in this country. We would have a lot more freedom at this point if fewer Americans were so docile. I mean, that's something. Thanks for mentioning the Bush betrayal earlier in the program. I was amazed to see so many conservatives who had been outraged by every civil liberties infringement by Bill Clinton. All of a sudden, you get George W. Bush setting up a secret worldwide torture regime. And it's like, well, you know, he's just trying to keep us safe. And even that, going beyond that, seeing the Justice Department, you know, telling a federal judge that, they had a right to use tortured confessions in federal court. It's like, what is this, the Spanish Inquisition?
Well, there's two more things I wanted to cover if we could.
Sure.
The first is, when we talk about all these abuses of power, it's interesting because I'm not even sure any of this actually helps to protect us, you know, and I know I still hear, and you've probably come across this as well, certain people, maybe usually I've noticed they're on the right that will, this was especially true in like the 90s, but they would go on about they're building the FEMA camps. And I would always be like, I think that they may be a little bit too incompetent for that.
Yes.
None of this actually helps protect us, though, it seems like.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. I have memories of doing a talk show in the late 90s, and there was some caller in who was all wired up, and he was said that he had heard or he'd seen that they were building these camps. I said, so who's going to be in charge? And he said, FEMA. So I said, look, it'll be easy to escape, okay? So, but it's interesting. I learned later from Tim Weiner's book on the FBI, came out around 2012. The book review was titled American Stasi. I've forgotten what the title of the book, Enemies, maybe. And it turned out in the FBI, in the 1950s, the feds actually did build 6 or 8 or whatever number of these camps, which would have been used to round up people that were on J. Edgar Hoover's enemies list. So it's kind of like, okay, well, the FEMA camps are BS, but, you know, there's that's kind of an uncomfortable precedent. But Andrew Weissman would not approve of us mentioning that.
Well, and we won't even get into stuff like Oliver North and Rex 84, but it's interesting to me. Do you agree with that? That a lot of this stuff with the NSA, I feel like they're collecting so much data that it's actually not even helping in any way to protect us. It's like they're trying to find that key information, but it's like finding a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, and it's a situation where they're choking on greed. Because they've gotten so much information. I think it's could be the same thing that happens with some of the federal Justice Department's January 6th prosecutions. I was reading the other day that they've got like just the equivalent of 10 million photos and 14,000 hours of video here and thousands more there. And it's there was an expert on the case who said it's like a Tower of Babel nightmare. And you're waiting for the tower to crash over. And the same thing with the NSA. They have so much information. But, I mean, here's a paradox. You have the government vacuuming up a lot of information from some people in the government would not trust, probably people like you or me. And at the same time, you have a case like what the inspector general pointed out last week. You had the FBI. You had all these female gymnasts, gold medal winners, filing these complaints of sexual assault. And not only did the FBI bury those complaints, but they lied about the case. And, you know, so, you know, you got an FBI agent whose lies meant that you had that the sexual abuse continued to these young girls. And there's no charges against the FBI agent who effectively enabled that sexual abuse. And yet these are the people who are going to protect us.
I also wanted to add, when it comes to January 6th, I think the thing that gets lost in all the debates about it, and, you know, I am in no way sympathetic towards the things that happened on January 6th. I thought it was all a mess. I was not a big fan of the type of people that sort of backed it. But ultimately, I don't think that even if you disagree with those Trump supporters, I'm not going to cheer on the national security apparatus. And I don't want to feed people to the national security apparatus because it's a thing of, first they came for them, then they'll come for me, and then they'll come for, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's chilling to me to see the push to expand the definition of domestic terrorism, because there's already a definition from the Patriot Act. is already far too broad. There were a lot of cases out in Portland, or the federal, where Trump's, I guess, you know, Trump's U.S. attorney for Oregon was filing a lot of terrorist charges, most of which got bounced out by the Biden people. But this is already a broad law, and if you make it broader, and, you know, I've got a story coming out, should be coming out tomorrow, where, you know, I'm looking at the arguments that they're making, the DOJ, the sentencing memos, the statements in court, the statements by the judge. And as far as I can tell, the new definition is trespassing plus bad thoughts equals terrorism. And
when you mentioned Portland, is that in reference to, like, I know Portland has a large sort of Antifa and anarchist contingent, sure, and I know Trump wasn't a fan of them.
Yes, that's a fair summation.
A bit of an understatement.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lot of violence in Portland, and there was a lot of strong local reaction when some of the federal agents came in. I think Trump sent them in, or sent some of them in, or they were there for a while. I was not following Portland closely, but if memory serves, Portland had more terrorism charges than any other state last year, partly because of those demonstrations. But some of the charges were, you know, I should have my files in front of me. I don't, but they were, you know, basically chicken shit. I mean, there were some very violent protesters out there who did attack people and harm people, but there were a lot of others who were just kind of angry and maybe, you know, breaking a few things or just kind of being where they weren't supposed to be. And if you're prosecuting people as terrorists because they were where they weren't supposed to be, well, this is, you know, this is a crosshair that could be on me plenty of times in my own life, because, you know, I've tended to wander off the reservation. So,
well, the other thing is, I mean, we also had the whole thing with, black identity extremists being put on lists and whatnot under Trump. And it seems like, I feel like the problem we have in our sort of political discourse today is that, you know, it's all about red team versus blue team. And, you know, when one abuses its power against another, you know, the other team will say, oh, well, our guy's doing it, so that's okay. And that's the last thing I wanted to touch upon with you is, I think we have a dual problem in this country of a runaway executive branch, the imperial presidency, as some people called it in the Bush years, and also an entrenched deep state. I mean, as much as I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, there is a swamp in D.C. There are these atrophied institutions that don't want to change in any way or reform. And, you know, I don't think either of those things is good. But a lot of Americans, I think, have trouble looking at that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, people need to recognize to keep their eye on the ball, and the ball is how much arbitrary power does the government have to punish you, to seize your property, to wreck your life. And unfortunately, the government's got a hell of a lot more power to do that than it did even 25 years ago. And insofar as focus, as Americans think that the enemy and the problem is the other private citizens on the other side of the barricade this week, well, then it's going to be easy for the government to seize more power. But it's a good point you make, going to the imperial presidency. I mean, I think that was a common term during Nixon's years as well. But if you see what Bush and Cheney and Ashcroft did in the first decade of this century, it's appalling to see what they got away with. I mean, cancel habeas corpus. If you look at the 2006 Military Commission Act, it was basically retroactively legalized torture. And, you know, there was a funny Washington Post headline. It says something like, this is a new law which doesn't have some of the safeguards that laws normally have. And I'm thinking, yeah, retroactively legalizing torture, is this? And I don't know. I was disappointed there wasn't a lot more outrage by a lot of the stuff that Bush did. And it appalls me that so many liberals are saying, well, he's not a bad guy. Look, he's a painter, you know.
I agree 110% with you on that one.
Yeah, it's just appalling. Well, he seems to really care about those disabled soldiers. Has he ever made a full apology for lying to send those troops to war? Has he ever taken responsibility for his torture regime. You know, there are so many poxes that George W. Bush, you know, unleashed on this nation. And yet, well, you know, he's a pretty good painter. Yeah, well, so is Hunter Biden.
So the last thing, I also mentioned the deep state. For people that, you know, have a knee-jerk reaction to that term, and they think about, you know, some of the most wild sort of conceptualizations of the deep state that you'll find in the darkest corners of the internet. I think there is a reasonable definition and a reasonable thing that we can call the deep state. Maybe you could explain that to some of my listeners if they've written off that term, because I think some people write it off without really thinking about it.
Well, you know, that's a funny term because it first came, it was first used fairly often in the U.S. media, I think 2015, 2016. Trump might have used it in 2017 and 2018, and the media scoffs. But then in the summer of 2019, late 2019, you had places, you had a columnist at the Washington Post and New York Times saying, thank God for the deep state. That was literally the phrase they were using.
I remember that article very well.
Yes, there was a huge amount of cheerleading for the deep state by people who wanted to see Trump impeached. And some of the leaks coming out of the agencies, CIA, NSA, Pentagon, branches of the State Department, were basically the key to the Trump's first impeachment. But it's funny, as soon as Trump's presidency ended, or as soon as the impeachment ended, the media is now saying, deep state, well, that sounds like you're a paranoid nut. And it's like, you know, well, wait a minute. In, you know, September 2019, you were cheering it. It didn't exist. I never said that. Now, screw them. Google it. But the deep state is these agencies that have vast secret power, and they are effectively lawless because you don't have the FISA court pulling in the reins. Almost nobody in Congress knows what the hell's going on. Senator Ron Wyden has done great work for over a decade trying to tell the truth, but he's muzzled. Rand Paul is doing some great work as well on this. And you have federal judges, you know, a perfect example of how the deep state's out of control. You had challenges after the New York Times in late 2005 exposed some of the NSA massive illegal wiretaps. You had challenges filed in court, and they bumped along, and they finally got the Supreme Court in 2012. Well, you know, the Obama administration basically shot them down, saying that the plaintiffs did not have standing to sue over this because they could not prove they were spied on. Well, yeah, that's what you get when you get that secret deep state. But for them to use that argument to throw the cases out of court, and then 3 months after the Supreme Court struck, you know, bought that argument, you had Snowden blowing to hell the entire credibility of the NSA and much of the Obama administration. So Eric Holder and the rest of the gang, these are folks that said, oh, don't worry, it's under control. Complete lies. I was shocked.
I was going to say, it's so wild now because we've come so far since Snowden, and now it's almost like I don't hear anyone talking about the war on whistleblowers. I mean, look, we have what's being done to Daniel Hill right now. I see very few people talking about it. We saw what happened with Reality Winner, and a lot of people treated that as a partisan issue. But this war on whistleblowers, it's really just damaging, I think, to the credibility of these institutions, which, you know, I think if you're a libertarian, maybe that's, you know, a good thing, right? You don't like,
well,
the institutions. Anyways,
I shed a lot of tears on that lost credibility.
it's horrible. It's that no one talks about this war on whistleblowers and
I agree
just the war on our civil liberties.
Yeah, there was a story I did for USA Today a couple of years ago saying that Julian Assange, instead of an indictment, he should get a Presidential Medal of Freedom. I have pushed, last week I was pushing an article on Daniel Hale to an editor and couldn't get the time of day. So. I hate to see him going down because what he did was heroic, and he's someone who probably saved lives by exposing all the wrongful killing. Frustrating.
So in closing, I know I kept you a few minutes over.
Right,
I guess
fine.
with regards to final thoughts on all of this, I think there are people like you and me, and I think there's a lot more of us actually that are thinking in terms of, hey, I don't like this imperial presidency, but I also don't like this runaway deep state swamp creature stuff going on either. Do you think eventually reason will win out and people can come together on these things, hopefully?
I was hoping you would ask me a final question that would let me sound optimistic. It could happen. It could happen. It's been frustrating as hell to me to see, again, going back to the late 90s, they seem to be progress. Clinton's doing this, he's doing that, Janet Reno, yada, yada. 9/11, and there's just an absolute avalanche. We've seen similar avalanches of unchecked seizures of power over the last year and a half. And I don't, I wish more Americans would recognize the wisdom of the Bill of Rights. I mean, it's supposed to put a damn leash on government across the board, due process, a right to speedy trial by jury. I mean, just basic decency. But you've got a president out there who's kind of saying, Facebook is practically a mass murder because it didn't ban the posts that he had disapproved. It's like, I mean, okay, it would not be surprising to hear Trump say that, but it's like, so I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of smart, good-hearted people who are fighting hard for freedom, and it's possible things could turn around sooner and better than I think.
Well, Jim Bovard, I want to thank you again for coming on Parallax Views. How can my listeners keep up with your work?
JimBovard.com. I repost most of my articles there. I've got a blog there. Get articles popping up here and there, and so far I haven't been indicted.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I very much hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jim Bovard. As always, let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax or by email at parallaxviewspod@protonmail.com. Producers credit shoutouts to Catherine, Nathan, Holland, Mark, Chase, Zach, Omar, Ted, Brian, Gratz, Martin, Gary, Emilia, and Mickey. If you'd like your very own producer's credit on each and every edition of Parallax Views, well, consider joining those listeners in supporting me at the $10 or $15 tiers of my Patreon page at patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. There is also a $1 tier and a $5 tier. Any amount will help. Your support is what keeps this show going. So if you appreciate the work I do, $1, $5, $10, $15, doesn't matter. Please consider supporting me on Patreon at patreon.com/parallaxviews. Again, that's patreon.com/parallaxviews. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxieties, problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.